Hello everyone, and welcome to the fifth episode of the Strings of Thought podcast. My name is Nedelina Zeleva, and today we have our next podcast guest, the guitarist, composer and music researcher Martin Vichnik. What you just heard was his original composition called Dove. Hi Martin, it's a pleasure to meet you today.
Pleasure to meet you too.
Thank you. So tell us a little bit about yourself and the beginning of your music life.
Okay, right, back to the very beginning.
Yeah.
Okay. Right, well, I came into this world having two interests from when I was about 4 or 5, you know, when I started to have some sort of initial development, and that is music and cricket. Turned out not to be so good at cricket, although I used to play, but music was something that stayed with me, and I just wanted to learn everything I could about music. I used to drive my teachers mad at my junior school and even at infant school, I just was looking for things, just naturally looking for things and listening for things and driving my parents mad to help me, but that was, they're not musical at all. Then it was the sort of the pop revolution, you know, Beatles, Rolling Stones, Jimi Hendrix,
yeah.
And wow, I wanted to, you know, how is he doing that? I wanted to discover that, and I had a friend who was also interested in music as well as playing the drums, and so what we did initially, we used to buy records, you know, we had a little dance set record player, well he had, and we'd buy records and just try and work out by ear what was going on the records. Yeah. And yeah, I had at that time a basic guitar, and he had a basic drum kit, and we'd listen to like sort of Jimi Hendrix tunes and try and work out, you know, the riffs and the chord patterns, and also his father had, and he borrowed Dave Brubeck record, and we were trying to work out take five, because we didn't know what take five meant,
yeah.
And we couldn't work out what was going on at all. You know, it was seemed so odd, but we stayed at it. And looking at it retrospectively, was great sort of like ear training right from the start for, you know, listening to all sorts of things, but not having any sort of tutoring in it. So gradually we both became, you know, went for lessons and became better musicians. And I went to, my mother bought me a really bad guitar. She didn't have a clue what to get. And I went for guitar lessons with a guy who wasn't really a guitarist, but he was local and he was a pianist. He taught me sort of like plectrum style up to sort of grade 2 really, because his skills weren't further than that, but he was an FLCM pianist, and he said to me, okay, I can't teach you any more guitar, but let's do theory. So I was about 12, 13, and I thought, that sounds good. So he took me through all the theory grades. So I learnt theory, and I found it really quite easy. I found it easier than a lot of my schoolwork. At school, trying to seek other people who are playing instruments or in bands and getting together with other guys and playing music, forming bands, getting to know local musicians. So I was in Hackney, in East London, growing up, and it was just a fantastic sort of multicultural scene there. So I had friends who have all sort of races and colours. And we used to get together, and so I learnt about ska music, soul music, Afro-Caribbean music, and so we used to play and cross-fertilise, and it was a great, you know, just a great scene. And what happened from there is that I learnt, you know, I was getting quite proficient at playing the electric guitar, and I had an acoustic guitar as well, and I was trying to copy people. What I found was that, you know, socially, that people were coming up and saying to me, play me a tune. And I couldn't play a tune. I could play the band part or the riff that I'd learned for those specific songs. But I noticed that every now and again on the TV, someone like John Williams would play, or the flamenco guys would play, like Manita Staplata. And they played everything, you know, they played the tune, they played the bass, they played the chords, they played the percussion, and I thought, I want to learn to do that,
yeah.
You know, so it's possible on this guitar to transcend just playing the band part.
Yeah, the guitar, you can be the band.
Yeah, you can be the orchestra.
Yeah.
I hadn't read Sawyer's treatise then, in method, I should say. And so I sought a classical guitar teacher. So I was 16, 17, and I found a local guy who turned out to be just the most fantastic teacher and person, and we're still friends, and he lives in the Isle of Wight now, and we still talk regularly, and he's been like my first real like classical guitar mentor. Eventually I got into music college, and then spent 3 years just concentrating on guitar. I had a fantastic composition teacher as well. By the way, going back a bit, you know, in like playing in pop bands and things, I was got into songwriting. So I was getting into composing through songwriting and, you know, working, trying to compose riffs and chord patterns and tunes. Lyrics, bit of a problem, but, you know, working in collaboration. So I concentrated, because I wanted really, you know, to be a professional. And then I did a sort of fourth year at the academy. So I got my LLC MTD, doing the performance course at London College of Music. And I had a great teacher there called Oliver Hunt, who unfortunately is no longer with us. And my composition professor was a guy called Bill Passfield, who was a fantastic musicologist, fantastic musician. I mean, for example, he started by grounding me in medieval music, you know, Lassus Palestrina, and getting me to write in that style. And so I learned about the different clefs and so on, and trying to sight read in those clefs. And he could sight read in those clefs. So he was fantastic. And I also had some conducting tuition by a guy called Peter Turton. So I wanted to understand what it meant to conduct. And if I was going to be compose music, there will become a time in the future where I need to organise, you know, the band. So leaving college, I did this sort of fourth year at the academy with Richard Stoker, who was a composition professor there. So then it was time to go out in the world. So this is like the late 70s, and I had a guitar duet partnership. We did some big concerts, some serious concerts with my whole Purcell Room as duetists. It was obvious to me that I needed to do some teaching. So I had a young family to support. Those days it was ILEA in London. So I was teaching at various schools and peripatetic teaching, playing gigs, doing concerts when they came up, trying to promote myself as a concert artist, playing in ensembles, the occasional orchestra gig, you know, playing shows. I did quite a few show jobs. So just trying to earn a living. It was pretty impossible for quite a few years. So I had to do other things as well, like working in bars to make ends meet.
It happens to musicians.
It was tough. It was really tough. But gradually, things built up, and I managed to make a basic living as a musician.
So I wanted to ask you a little bit more about your compositional process and how has improvising affected the way you compose music, and do your compositions mainly come from improvising?
So with Bill Passfield, I learnt about composing by studying medieval, by studying serial music, Baroque, Rococo. We covered everything to give me a historical grounding in composition. And still some of the ideas and the techniques from those lessons are still with me. And I use them, bring them even into, electronic acousmatic music. So as far as the creative process is concerned, I think it's just open-ended, really. Because sometimes, like the tune I played before, Dove, which actually was an improvisation into Dove, what I would call sound-based rather than note-based introduction. If you want to know more about the concept of sound-based music, check out Lee Landy, who's at De Montfort University. He's research on, and he's written a book about it. To me, in my head, things come in various different ways. That Dove was just appeared. It was sort of like a visceral outpouring after watching the Twin Towers. You know, the atrocities in New York. I just wanted to sort of connect, and it also made me think at that time that there were lots of other, all around the world, there were people suffering from atrocities that really should not, you know, would need to transcend this negative karma. So I, as a musician, I just wanted to make a statement about it, and that's what Dove is about, really. And that just came into my head. Most of it just came into my head, and I just worked on it, organised it. You know, I've been playing bottleneck since I was a teenager, so the sound of a standard tuned guitar using bottleneck is quite, you know, in my head. And it just came, and when I play, I play the sections in various orders. It's never the same. But there are definite orders and a general progression of growing in it and then dying away. Sometimes ideas come in just a small idea. It might be a thematic idea, might be a progression of notes you know, stacked up horizontally and developed from there. Sometimes when I'm improvising, so I improvise a lot, it's just part of something I've always done because I've learned that blues music, yeah. So improvising is something that's always been there. And so if I have a good idea from improvising, I maybe, you know, log it. To me, the creative process is about logging things that that resonate with me, ideas that resonate with me. So capturing them in whatever way, in notation or in a recording or in a verbal idea, so I can try and come back to that atmosphere that I felt when that came into my life. And developing the idea, so it's a storehouse, and it's like a spiral staircase. And along the spiral staircase, some ideas will come in, they'll come back, they're rejected, maybe forever, maybe for somewhere in the future. And it's this ever-ending sort of process, really, of capturing ideas, throwing them away, bringing them back, developing them, and not getting stressed about the mental stuff going on there.
So how did you start using extended techniques on the guitar, and what inspired you to start exploring the sound possibilities?
Well, I mean, as I've alluded right from the beginning, being an electric guitarist, electric guitarists are using extended techniques as part of what they do. It's not just, it's relatively new concept in classical guitar. I've always had this tendency to move towards contemporary music. It's the same as art as well. My passion in the art world is contemporary art. So when I went to music college and was, you know, studying classical guitar, I tended to have more of an affinity with the composers of the 60s and 70s, like Hans Werner Henze, Leo Brouwer, you know, guitarist no, and a guy called Gilbert Biberian, who's not so well known, but in my research into using extended techniques, he was using extended guitar techniques before. Yeah, so I'll prove this, you know, with the data before Leo Brouwer, and he wrote some incredible music which I've played, and Gilbert and I are still good friends. One of my thoughts is to try and bring his music to a wider public, because he's a real innovator, and he's not as well known as people like Leo Brouwer. and hands. But hands for the hands is a different kettle of fish. He's, you know, a sort of an orchestral composer, and not a guitarist composer. Mm.
In one of your lectures at the Lithuanian Academy of Music and Theatre, which is actually available to watch online on YouTube, you mentioned that we can learn a lot more about music by first developing a sense of the sounds of the guitar rather than just interpreting the score in front of us. Could you elaborate on that?
Sure, yeah. The call for that conference was about audiation. So audiation is, in short, it's quite a big subject. Look it up, the meaning of it, audiation. But it's basically about the inner ear. Obviously, we have the ear, which is outer sounds to in. But creative people use inner sounds to out to create their music. You know, it comes from the mind and the imagination. So what's this all about? So I was looking into it as far as my experiences were concerned, and also about pedagogy. The basis of my research is about pedagogy, and so how in an education system, how can we develop what we've got? So to the best of my knowledge, audiation and the workings of the inner ear aren't in any of our systems for learning to play the guitar. So how can I bring this, create awareness? So one of the things that I realised when thinking about it is that if I look at a note, say open A string, see it in standard notation, I know what that's going to sound like on my guitar pretty much exactly before I play it. Learning at an early stage, this would be really useful if we have some tools to help students in any environment really to identify with sounds before they hear it. And to, you know, sort of like look at it in a bit closer. Because we all sort of like do it, but we don't sort of think about it. So the idea was to bring, and one of the things I noticed was that improvising had a big part to play, because a lot of what you're doing when you're improvising is imagining really quickly and then bringing it out. So I wanted to look closely at that, at what I was doing, and how I could sort of like encapsulate in some sort of way and write about it and then add it to what's already there in the world with the regular teaching and analysis. I've been sort of like developing some ideas there. I found some links with, for example, Pauline Oliveros, who unfortunately recently passed away, fantastic researcher and a musician. She developed this system called deep listening, and there is a deep listening society which I'm a member of, and it's still ongoing. One can look it up, the deep listening society, and it's about actually taking time to listen to what's around us in our environment really carefully. You know, if you stop at any moment, if I stop now, I can analyze what's going on. I can hear the little bit of echo in this room. I can hear little Nedlina's slight breathing. Yeah, I can feel Nedlina's aura as a human being. I can hear sounds outside of people walking past, the occasional bird, the occasional bit of traffic. I'm audiating. Yeah, and how can I bring this into the learning environment at early key stage or at university level? Going back to Pauline Oliveros, she has developed a set of tools to help us to develop this in ourselves. The other thing that I connected to was electronic music, in particular acousmatic music, so music which is written specifically for speakers, for an array of speakers and a diffusion system and all sorts of ambisonic systems and so on. There's been a lot of research into listening very carefully, so I was looking at the research by Dennis Smalley, who goes into it in a lot of detail, and he has written about critical listening. So listening repeatedly and just concentrating on the sounds themselves and nothing else. And he's developed this into a pedagogical system as well. So bringing other people's research and my own thoughts and my own experiences, I've sort of developed some ideas and thoughts which are just the beginning of the work, really, to try and bring the idea of audiation into the various key stages of learning.
Some of your pieces were chosen to be part of the Trinity Grade syllabus in the 90s.
Mm.
How has your performance and compositional practice changed since then?
It's changed because of my sort of personal development through my research, really. I mean, I'm still, because I'm still doing regular concerts, person in the Western world, I still write music, like Dove, which can be written down in standard notation and can be seen as, you know, Western music, you know, classical, modern classical music, if you like. I've got more and more into, you know, through doing the research and getting more into improvised music, I've got to know people in the London area who are improvisers, and I'm playing a lot of improvised music, which that I would call sound-based. Well, it's actually a mixture of sound-based and note-based, but it's sort of based on Schaeferian tradition and music concrete more than jazz based, you know, free improvisation. So it's free improvisation. If you want to know more about the sounds, I regularly go to the London Improvisers Orchestra, the LIO, and they've got lots of stuff on website and YouTube to hear the sounds. And so we get together the first Sunday of the month, and sometimes there'd be 20 or 30. There's an orchestra of improvisers. And we just play together, and sometimes we have people guiding us, which are called, it's called conduction, not conductor. And again, check it out, and you'll hear and read and see what I mean. And I've got also developed duets with other string players. I've got a CD coming out soon with Phil Durant, who's a mandolin player. So mandolin and guitar music like you've never heard before.
Sounds good.
Also, I'm getting together with a French classical guitarist who plays 10-string guitar, Pascal Marzan, and playing together, hopefully doing some gigs. Yeah, so my whole mode of playing composing has changed because I've just developed so much awareness going through the process of going through the PhD and getting over the line with the PhD and developing the ideas and principles out into the real world.
What are your future musical goals?
Oh, well, one of the great things is when you get to, traditional retirement age, if you're a musician and you can still keep going, you can just keep working. And so my goals are to develop what I'm doing, to develop my passion for playing contemporary music, developing pedagogical goals for the future, learning, arranging. I'm always arranging popular tunes. I've got quite a few Michael Jackson tunes, which I've arranged in my own particular way. Yeah, I get sort of like fixations and fascinations. For example, recently I've always loved the Bach Chaconne in D minor, and all the versions for guitar are based on Bach's violin music. The traditional Segovia version and so on are totally based on the Segovia version, but I'm completely in love with the early 20th century Busoni, amazing musician. Check him out if you don't know about Busoni, not just his piano music, but his contribution to sound his contribution to multiphonic harmonics in a scientific way. So he has done this amazing piano version of the Chaconne in D minor. And so I wanted to do a guitar version based on his version. And that's what I've done, and I've performed it a couple of times. It's a big job. Yeah. I've recorded it, it's on my SoundCloud, if anyone wants to hear
it.
And it's just fascinating. And it's part of my daily, or probably every other day, to play through that piece. Because to me, in that piece, the emotion of Bach is very prevalent in that piece, in all its facets, especially in his philosophical facets as well. There is a story that goes with that we don't know if it's totally true, but I'd like to think it's true, that Bach was away very rarely, because he was with the stick at home. Bach was away, and the communication wasn't like it was today. And when he came back from this trip, his first wife had passed away. And the Chaconne in D minor there is some evidence for this, actually. There was an outpouring, and I can really sense that in the music, the emotion in it. And it just helps me emotionally and technically on my guitar to play my version of the Bach on a regular basis.
Yeah, it's a masterpiece.
It's incredible.
That's great. Thank you so much for taking part in the Strings of Thought podcast.
It's been an absolute pleasure.
Yeah,
thank you
for having me. Too. Thank you. If you enjoyed this 5th episode of the podcast, please leave a comment and subscribe for any future episodes. In the description down below, you can find more information about Martin's guitar research on extended techniques and hear more of his original compositions. Thank you so much for listening, and I will talk to you in our next episode.